All right, we're back here talking with David Alpa and Fred Glaisher, two poets who have spoken their minds on certain stuff. And in this second section of the show, we're going to talk, we're going to lead off with Fred Glaisher. And earlier this year, during, I guess we'd call it Gulf War II now, there was a website put up by a fellow named Sam Hamill, who's the editor of Copper Canyon Press, and it was called Poets Against the War, I think it was .org. And I had done an essay about it, and that's how I came across Fred Glaisher's letter to the editor to the New York Times regarding this website. And I have to say, I'm someone who's of a moderate bent, and I'm not a big Bush fan and whatnot, but I found so disingenuous this website because, number one, they claimed that the claim was that Hamill had turned down an invitation or had spoken up or out against the war, when the real circumstance was the First Lady, Laura Bush, who I have to say, I like Laura Bush. I don't like her husband, but I like her. She has been more supportive of the arts than any First Lady since Jacqueline Kennedy. And she invited him and a handful of other of these basically dead white male poets to come and read some poems, having nothing to do with the war, having to do with the celebration of arts, which for a politician or a politician's wife is amazing. And the guy took opportunistically took a stand, gathered a bunch of dim-witted poets to post these terrible, horrible, horrendous political poems on this website, basically snubbing the First Lady. And I'll tell you, I'm a registered Democrat, but I just thought that it was garbage. I mean, the poetry was garbage. The whole motivation was garbage. It was see-through. And Fred Glaisher was one of the few people, I guess, online that spoke out against that. So, Fred, after my ranting here, if you want to just say what your letter was about and maybe give your own take on that.
Well, I was similarly appalled at the whole reaction by Hamill and other poets to the White House invitation, really. And I had to do something. I just viscerally, it just shook me so much. I'm just so sick of that type of politicized approach in terms of writers and poets, and always taking the stance of kind of climbing up on the barriers and we're going to correct the right thing. I feel the United Nations is something that needs to continue to be developed vastly more than we have been. There's a lot of blame to go around. The United Nations has many problems in itself of radicalism and political intrigue and manipulation too. I'm not unequivocal supporter of Bush. I didn't vote for the man, but I felt that he did do the right thing after 9/11 in a lot of ways. And that we need to be really serious with what we're confronting as a nation and a people and indeed as a world. And I feel, one thing, Bush definitely needs to work more closely with the United Nations and help develop it. This has been one of my interests and passions going back for decades, really. And when I saw this whole Poets Against the War thing, it was so trivial and so predictable once again. I just had to speak out.
And it was just a networking tool. I mean, this was how low-caste poets that have no name could maybe get a little bit in so that later on they could be published in the dozen or so big-name poets. And
everybody jumped on the bandwagon,
you know,
man.
And he can do
poetry that pays the price.
Yeah.
In the public image.
Sure.
And all the more contempt and marginalization as an art.
Well, and is people actually talking about poetry?
Yes. What
you
all
know,
the
so, and doesn't
radicals
mean
are doing once again.
Well,
with
okay.
Nothing practical, no real intelligent confrontation with the realities that we confront and are trying to murder us. In no uncertain terms.
I'll give you another example of cynicism.
Once again, poets have failed. They failed our culture. They have failed our culture by writing only about their own contemptible little lives.
Yeah.
There's life outside ourselves.
Well, and then
called history and the big world.
Yeah, but that's true. But now we're bitching about
Coleman
poets writing
Virgil
about the big world.
Wrote about that world.
Well, but the thing
I've been reading Cervantes all summer. Cervantes wrote about his culture. In fact, he wrote about Islam a lot.
And so did E.M.
Bitch. And
it's way
and
easy
poetry.
To bitch.
You know, there's a real genre going back for decades, really. I mean, way before Joya, Dana Joya's essay and others.
It goes back centuries.
Absolutely. Dryden and Johnson all complained about
Swift.
Too many scribblers around. You know, so there's an element of that, too, Arthur, I'd say. But we're really at the end of a dead literary period.
Okay.
And
yeah.
The only way a new literary period can come about is the way they always do. A new master steps forward and buries them with a book that changes the absolute direction of everything.
Yeah, I would welcome biting
him. Marxism, socialism, all the dreck that has corrupted modern literature to an exceeding amount. And really, a lot of that's in the academy. Look, I spent years on deconstruction and all that trash. This you know, it's, whether literature or whatever the academy produces, Robert Hayden said once to me, everything they touch, they ruin.
Mm.
And absolutely true. I've never wanted anything to do with the academic world. I spent years when I first got out of high school intentionally studying on my own, and I only went to the university after I found out who I was as a writer. And you know, that's the problem. You're writing David's articles on the MFA programs are so right on. I mean, that is a lot of the problem.
Well, and you know,
the professionalization
of
it all.
And I think one of the things
style. I mean, Sandberg's nice, but you know, there's no sophistication. This is my opinion. He's okay, but he's the old form, and there isn't that intellectual depth.
It may actually be something of a...
That's the only way literature periods have ever changed.
Yeah, I agree.
Absolutely everyone. Virgil buried the Alexandrians. Cervantes buried 200 years of chivalry writing in Spain and elsewhere, in Provençal.
Maybe that's true sometimes, but I don't think it's true every time. I think that tends to be the way that we see history as a filter.
Confessional poets buried the high modernists.
Well,
and they did
let me make my point here. You know, the point here is that sometimes those single great men who come out, or women who come out with a single book that everybody does, are writing in total obscurity until after they're
absolutely.
Dead.
Absolutely,
including Pynna.
Spare the pound. He wasn't a terrible poet. He's an excellent poet.
Well,
he wrote some
I can't read
poetry.
Pound. He puts me
he
to sleep.
He wrote a lot of terrible poetry.
He wrote a lot
of
very
lot of
bad poetry.
First-rate, fantastic poetry. And I loathe the man's politics. Life.
Yeah,
I've gone on the internet and actually checked in and heard some of his broadcasts for Mussolini, not in his voice, but transcripts, and they are absolutely incredible.
Right.
Let me get back.
So ain't gonna happen.
It's all the same poem, though.
Let me just get back to the idea of isms. Now, I'm looking here. I've got in my hand the January-February 2003 Poets and Writers issue, which David Alpa's first column came out in. And I remember I had written a letter to the editor that didn't get published regarding your piece, David, and I don't recall it off the top of my head. But basically, my main gripe with your article was, like many people, you didn't name the names. You should have named bad poets, the bad editors, the bad publications. That's one of the things.
Conrad Aiken dismissed him in like Conrad Aiken, who was
agree. I've always liked Ivers.
Yeah, but
Winters as
but
a critic.
Well,
I think
you know,
he got a moral sense and a sense of.
But the problem is he had no. He had no good poetry. He had no art.
I don't
and,
think he's
and
a great
he was
poet
really
at all.
Really terrible at teaching.
But I think a critic, as a critic, he actually did have.
But the thing is now he's influenced all. He's basically one of the two or three people along with.
Yeah, I think the whole MFA thing is simply the wrong way to go. I consciously chose not to go into an MFA program and to stay away from them. And I can't imagine anybody learning how to write by sitting in a classroom.
Right.
I took a private tutorial with Robert Hayden, not in a class.
Much better.
He had only 3 to 5 students a semester, and he rejected lots of manuscripts that he didn't take people on. And it's an entirely different experience. I feel that's the way that apprenticeships for writers to go in the university.
Exactly.
But the university won't make money doing that.
Right. And the whole idea of apprenticeship, not only in poetry, but in all the art forms and in all human endeavors, is something that has been lost. I mean, I think one of the things that I've found wrong with colleges is most people that I've known that have come out of college have their individuality muted. The old idea of a master and apprentice strengthened the individuation. Totally. Let me just end this. Let's end this segment, and we're going to hear a poem by Fred Glaisher. And when we come back, we're going to talk about more of why poetry is bad. Here's a poem by Fred Glaisher.